where they actually did the most extensive research into the archaeological record that probably anyone has done for 150 years. They published these two books, Forbidden Archaeology and Hidden History of the Human Race. I have them here. This is kind of the full volume where they actually are documenting more than 100 archaeological cases of humans like us, evidence of humans like us, which are extremely old. And then this book, it's the same book, just short version that can be read by common people. All the same cases are they're all here in this one also, but it's just discussions are less extensive. That's the only difference. So these books were published in 1993, and actually the book became a sensation, and at that time a lot of discussion among scientists who actually came as a result of that. And then afterwards, Professor Karma is still living. Sataputta passed away 10 years ago. Professor Karma is still living. He's still working in this field here. And we're waiting for him to publish one more book. He has so many more cases, but yeah. What I'm going to show you are some of the cases you should understand any kind of like observation and empirical science, if you understand the word empirical science, where you observe, you experiment, and with your logic you try some conclusions, will always be imperfect. So we're not going to get a perfect idea about human and human origin through this. We're just going to see something that at least tells that there are, there can be, there's no reason to reject the Vedic scriptures due to the archaeological record. There's plenty of evidence and findings which confirm the Vedic claim that actually there have been human presence on this planet tens and even hundreds of millions of years. Something like that. Here is I don't know if it's completely clear, but this drawing here represents what you can say the conventional scenario, the idea of modern science of human origin. And we have up here, it says 10,000 years, 100,000 years, 1 million years, 10 million years, 100 million years, 1 billion years. So they would say that 10,000 years ago is when the civilization began. The first urban civilization is there. And before that, from between 10,000 and or something like 100,000 years ago, that's when humans like us appear. Nowadays, they're willing to extend it to 200,000 years. But humans like us are there something like 100,000 years ago. But culture is not, it's mainly Stone Age, what do you understand? Stone Age, hunters, gatherers, living in scattered groups here and there. 1 million years ago, you have some previous human species. They call them Homo erectus, and they talk about Homo habilis and like that. Beings as a kind of in between humans and apes living at that time. You go back something like 3-4 million years. It's mainly, they talk about the Australopithecus and species like that, which actually are just like apes that they assume were walking, 10 million years ago, some common ancestors to humans and apes. 100 million years ago, that's when the first mammals appear. 1 billion years ago, there are only single-cell living creatures. That's the idea. That's a conventional idea of the origin of life and the origin of human beings. So, yeah. But nevertheless, when the Dhrutakarma and Sariputta started looking, they found evidence of so many more archaeological findings, which somehow or another have not been published, which actually shows humans have been living here much longer than that. Mm. And yeah. I don't know if we can discuss, so why have we not heard about these discoveries? And they point out, Dhrutakarma points out, there seems to be going on some knowledge filtration inside the world of science, that a finding which is in conformity with the expectation of the scientists, the archaeologists, and so on, they easily accept it. Nobody's questioning them very much. They are accepted. They are being published in different journals. They are being exhibited at museums and like that. Everyone hears about them. When an archaeologist finds something that goes against his expectations or the expectations of his colleagues, then I mean. The archaeologist himself might doubt very much what he has found, or if he is sure what he has found, it's very difficult to convince his colleagues that actually what he found was actually that old. Also have it published, and they have often been criticized and scrutinized, and sometimes even rejected because it does not fit into the standard scenario. So one example of this we can start with here. Let's see. I'm stuck. Amoga, kan du trykke på en pil på computeren? Der var den, ja. So, we can go back to Mexico. In 1973, there were a discovery which was dated 250,000 years. Now, Mexico, 250,000 years doesn't sound so much, but the problem is this is in America, and humans like us are only supposed to have been in America for the last 10,000 years. Some will extend it to 30,000 years, but before that, there's supposed to have been no humans in America, no North America, South America, anywhere. So, therefore, this is interesting. Here is a picture from the excavations which were performed by top professional archaeologists. Here are some of the objects that were found. These are stone tools, stone implements, and they're actually quite advanced. I don't know how many of you are expert archaeologists, but these are very advanced. These are spearheads and so on. It's very fine stonework, and generally associated with what in Europe is called Cro-Magnon. Have you heard that expression, Cro-Magnon? Are you familiar with it? Okay, that's normally something like 35,000 years back in Europe. Mm. So they found stone implements like this, and then of course the archaeologists wanted to know how old are these stone tools that they have found. So they invited a team of geologists from the U.S. Geological Survey. The archaeologists did not date the stone tools themselves. They found, got some geologists, professional geologists, to come and look at these stone implements. And the geologists, they dated, stones themselves you cannot date. Mm-hmm. You have to date yeah, the layers where you find them, or some you know objects associated with the stone. So they found some bones from camels that had marks from butchering, same, and they dated these to 245,000 years. Then they dated a layer of volcanic ash, which was above the findings, and gave an age of 270,000 years. And also they performed two other kinds of datings, and in the end they concluded that at least this discovery is 250,000 years old. So when they presented this to the archaeologist, there was a problem. The archaeologist, Heikisler, would not accept this date. He said it's not possible. There were no humans in America 250,000 years ago, so it cannot be right. And the geologist said, we have dated it. So this is Virginia Steen McIntyre. She was one of three geologists at the team. She was a very young woman at that time. It was actually, she had just graduated as a geologist. This was actually her first job as a geologist. It was also her last. it turned out to be her last job. Afterwards, she couldn't get jobs anymore. And she writes here, not being an anthropologist. Anthropologists are the scientists who look into the origin of human beings. So I did not realize how deeply interwoven into our thought processes the dominant theory of the evolution of man is. Our work at Huayllatlaco has been rejected by most archaeologists because it contradicts that theory, period. So she describes what happened there. The archaeologists simply flatly refused to accept it and would not publish the finding of anything. And the geologists published it. They went to a kind of a little fringe science journal and had it finally had published, but like the main archaeological journals would not publish this. So that's one interesting example from Mexico. Then let's see, here is another example of a very old finding. This is from Germany. Northern Germany, a place called Schöningen, and this is 1997, where some, which can be dated to 600,000 years. Here is a photo from the excavations, and what they found was, again, different tools. Especially found some spears and spearheads, very advanced spears they found. So of course, then the date here they did not question the date, but they asked who has left these spearheads in northern Germany, and they concluded it must be this creature called, they called Homo erectus, which is not a fully human being, kind of, you know, half ape, half human being, because we know there were no humans like us 600,000 years ago. So it must have been him, which was also somewhat a sensation, because before that, nobody thought that Homo erectus could manufacture such fine stonework. But that it had to be him, because no one else was around, they concluded. So so that's an interesting modern find. But actually, Tutankhamun, he points out that, well, maybe it was not Homo erectus. Maybe it was Homo sapiens like us. Because actually there has been found bones, skeletons of Homo sapiens like us in Europe from the same period. They have been found, but not many are aware of it. They were found in 1863. In a place in France called Molay-Quignon, where, let's see if it says, yeah, this is a human jaw. I don't know if you, do you recognize this? You all have one. If you look at this, is what it looks like. Last you checked, I don't know if you checked your jaw last, but this is what a human jaw looks like. And this particular jaw was found in 1863 by this French archaeologist Boucher de Perre, and he insisted that it is from this particular age. He did not, in 1863 they couldn't put any, you know, 600,000 years, but they could see which layers they came from, and in that sense give a relative date to the finding. And his discovery was actually caused a lot of discussion amongst scientists in the 1860s, and many scientists, they rejected it. They did not accept this discovery. As a result, Boucher de Perre, he went back to the same location where the jaw had been found, and under very controlled circumstances, he conducted further excavations and found around 100 bones of Homo sapiens, humans like us, in 1863. Now again, at that time he found it, but nobody wanted to publish it. Again, because they had kind of thought he's a crank, so he has long since had lost the discussion, although afterwards he actually went and documented there were many more human bones from that age. So there seems to have been humans like us in Europe 600,000 years ago that were discovered in France. It could also be the same population of humans that made the spear points found in Germany that also dated to 600,000 years. So here is, we are now going to the island of Flores, Indonesia, and in 1996 a big collection of stone tools were found on this island, and they were dated to be 800,000 years old. Here are some drawings, here are some, okay, I thought it should be a picture also of them. Okay, but again, quite advanced stone tools were found there, and of course the question was then, who has made these stone tools? And the archaeologist concluded, again, it must be Homo erectus here, and to celebrate this, you know, he put on his nice clothes, because this is actually, he was, now he has been raised to the level of being much more advanced and civilized than anyone ever imagined. Why? Not because, only because of the stone tools, but because of the location of Flores, which is an island. Here is Flores. It's an island. So the real question is, how did Homo erectus get to Flores? Flores has been an island for several million years. So how would he get there? And the archaeologist said it's very simple. He built a boat and he sailed there, which you might say is an obvious solution. But the problem is, no one had imagined that Homo erectus could build boats and ships and sail in boats. Up until that point, the first ships and sailors were supposed to have been the humans who made it to Australia 60,000 years ago. But now suddenly they said Homo erectus was sailing 800,000 years ago. So that was a change, a shift in the opinion. However, it is actually also possible that it was not Homo erectus that was on Flores, because there is actually, from the same area, there is actually evidence of humans like us from the same age. If we hear, this is Flores, and if you go to Java, mm-hmm. and one of the major islands of Indonesia, that's where in 1892 some discoveries were made, which were given the name of Java Man. Anyone heard the expression Java Man?
I don't remember now.
Okay. Have you heard the expression Java Man? No. Okay, so that became a that was a very famous discovery. Here we are. It was in first in 1891. This skull cap. This is the top of a head. A skull cap from some kind of a creature. Not a human. This is not a human skull cap. It's some kind of ape-like creature was discovered there. And then the year later, this is a thigh bone, like we have the thigh here. This is a thigh bone, which is like an anatomical human thigh bone. They were found there. They were found here in this particular layer. It's on the riverbed, and you can see the thigh bone is here. The skull is here. They actually separated by something like 15 meters, but the scientist who found it, he claimed they're from the same person, the same individual, and said, and therefore we have an intermediate, we have a missing link between humans and apes, and that what became the Java Man, mm-hmm. and that became very it was is very very influential discovery, actually up until this point in 1891-92. There were two groups of archaeologists, scientists. One group claimed or was open to the idea that humans like us have been on this planet for many, many millions of years. And the other group, they favored a very young age for humans. So, but now scientists said, this settles it. We have found an intermediate link, 800,000 years, so humans cannot be older than that. That was kind of the logic. It's not, isn't 800,000. Yeah, I mean, it does not, as a logic, it does not necessarily follow, but that was kind of how it was concluded. From that point on, it was not any longer accepted the possibility that humans could have lived for many millions of years.
So that's Homo sapien that they are talking about? I mean, this bone is Homo sapien, or?
No, this bone, because the skull, cap is not human. Skull cap is not human, and the thigh bone is human. Mm. So say it must be some kind of intermediate species. That was the idea. And they called him Pithecanthropus erectus, if you want to use the Latin, and labeled Java Man. Now, what is interesting is that later on. This discovery has been rejected. I mean, not they found it, but that now today's scientists do not accept that these two objects come from the same individual, because they have found skeletons of Homo erectus later on, and there the thigh bone is not human; it's different, and so they don't accept that it is from the same individual anymore. They were separated by quite a distance, and there were many other animal bones in between. Mm. So there's no absolute reason why we should accept them from the same individual, and it's not generally not accepted they from the same individual anymore. Which suddenly, actually, and that possibility is ignored or not discussed. But actually, that means we have a modern human thigh bone from that's 800,000 years old. And the only creature known on this planet that has a human thigh bone like this is someone like us. So it could be an obvious idea that humans like us were roaming on Java 800,000 years and dropping our thigh bones so they can be found later on. I mean, that's a possibility. And there doesn't seem to be any other obvious possibility. So it could be these humans that were on Java could also have been on Flores, and that's why you find stone tools on Flores. So that's one piece of evidence there. Here is another one. This is from 1913. This is a complete skeleton that was dated to be between 1.15 to 1.7 million years old. It was found in, here is the skull that was found from this skeleton. A skeleton was found by a professional German scientist, Professor Hans Reck, and he found a complete skeleton in undisturbed layers in what is here is the location and a drawing of the different layers. And this layer here is something like, again, 1.15 to 1.7 million years old. And and he carefully studied it, and he found that there was no disturbances of the layers around it. It was not, because obviously the obvious idea or objection would be, this is from a younger grave. Someone buried someone here at one point in the, you know, in not so so distant past. But he carefully studied it, and he found there was no disturbance of the earth around the skeleton of the layers. They were completely undisturbed. This skeleton became object of a long, outstretched debate that lasted on for more than 20 years, which demonstrates the fact that if something goes against the expectations of scientists, they discuss it forth and back, and cannot accept it. Whereas if it had been confirming the ideas, they would just accept it. He's found it, and nobody would have discussed it. So that actually creates a double standard in science. I mean, if you really want to be unbiased dealing with evidence, you have to treat all evidence with the same level of scrutiny. You cannot be skeptical or, you know, extremely critical of what is goes against your expectations and very lenient with what confirms your expectations. But this appears this is what is going on. So this is a very good illustration of that. But from all the observations by this Professor Reck, there's no reason to think that it's not that old. And the skeleton is not in, it doesn't is not there anymore. The skull is still existing. But the complete skeleton was exhibited in a museum in Munich for some years. But then, during the Second World War, the museum was bombed, and the skeleton was somewhat lost. But then they found again what they think still is the skull. So that is still there. The rest of the skeleton seems to be lost. Here's something interesting from this is South America, Argentina. In Buenos Aires, in 1896, this skull cap was found, and this is a human skull cap like the ones we have, and that has been dated to 1.5 million years old. Again, that's extreme for South America. In America, it's supposed to only been humans for 10,000 years. Mm-hmm. So this was found in the harbor in Buenos Aires. There was some digging in an area of the harbor. And so laborers dug through first, they dug 15 meters down, then they came to this white layer, which is limestone, it's called a limestone called Tosca. And under this limestone, they found this skull here. And this layer down here is 1.5 million years old. So this particular skull was researched and studied by Florentino Ameghino, one of Argentina's best geologists in those days. And he wrote about it, and he concluded that we have found a human skull here that's 1.5 million years old in Argentina. And again, that discovery was severely criticized, and most scientists would not accept it. It's simply too old for humans to have been in Argentina 1.5 million years old. And Ameghino was himself ridiculed by many scientists for that, and I'll come back to that a little, in a few minutes, because that was not the end of the story. But before I continue, I'm going to insert a few more things, because what I'm doing here, so I started with like 250,000 years old, and then I'm moving back in time. But discovery of Florentina Ameghino later on resulted in further excavations which revealed even older human remains in South America. But before that, we are going to England. In 1881, was found in a place called Walton on Naas, 1.5 to 2 million year old. This is a. Can you see that this is actually a shell of a what's called a musling?
It's called
no, it's not called. It's a. I mean, it's like an oyster.
Okay.
Moga? Is that musling?
Mushroom or oyster?
Oyster or clam? I think they're called clam. Mm-hmm. You know these.
Shunk, yeah. You make shunk conch out of them.
No, it's not a conch animal, but it's kind of, you know, they. I mean, yeah, like that. Like you see, they open like this.
Yeah,
that's a clam.
That's a clam. Yeah. So this is a clam shell, and if you look at it, can you see there is a face? Someone has carved a face there. It's not the greatest piece of art, but it's clearly a face, two eyes, a nose, and a mouth. Someone has a
smiley.
Yeah, made a smiley on that one. That doesn't happen naturally. That doesn't happen naturally. So a clamshell like that was found that was 1.5 to 2 million years old. So, here, this is a place, Walton on Naas, it's on the coast of England. Here is this is a clint where you can see the layers of that part of England very clearly. And especially you can see this somewhat orange-red layer. It's called, the Red Crack. And that is something like, let's see, what is it? 2 to 3 million years old. A number of very interesting findings were done in this layer in the 1800s and in the first part of the 20th century. Let's see, what was that? First of all, there was in 1855, and other human jaw like this was found at a place called Foxhole. And that is 1.5 to 2 million years old. It was found by some laborers, and they understood this could be interesting. So that in the local village in Foxhall, at the bar the same evening, they met the local doctor, and he bought this skull, or this jaw, for he gave beer to everyone, and then he got the jaw. And because he understood how valuable it was, so he took possession of it and was studying and discussing and writing about it, and it was circling among scientists for a while, and then it disappeared. No one knows what happened to it, but we have reports of it, that there was such a jaw was found. Here you have Red Crack, 1.5 to 2 million years old. And below that you have another layer called the Detritus Bed, which is between 2 and 38 million years old. Both these layers, different discoveries were made in this period, end of the 1800s up until around 1930. where many stone tools were found, traces of fire, and also one human skeleton was found in this area, mainly by this scientist called J. Reid Moore. He was president of the Prehistoric Society of East Anglia, and he was conducting many excavations and finding stone tools, all in big collections of stone tools dated to like 2 to 5 million years ago, and causing a lot of discussion amongst scientists, and many were rejecting them, but also some actually very prominent scientists, they were actually accepting them. For example, here, this is Henry Fairfield Osborne. He was director of the National the Museum of Natural History in New York. He was America's leading anthropologist. Anthropologists are those who are studying human origins, human history. so he was one of the world's leading anthropologists and archaeologists himself. He accepted the discoveries in England, and he wrote in 1921 that David Moore's discoveries are a sure proof for the existence of humans in Southeast England, humans intelligent enough to work flint and utilize fire before the end of Pliocene. And Pliocene is the geological age which ended 2 million years ago. So he's saying that there were humans who could work stone tools and use fire at least by 2 million years ago and further back that. So that's as late as 1921, top mainstream scientist, he accepts humans on the planet that old. So now we go back to Argentina again to continue the skull that was found in Buenos Aires, because what happened was that Florentino Ameghino had a brother named Carlos Ameghino, who became quite upset by the way that his brother was dealt with by the general scientist. So he set off for himself to make further excavation to see if he could find more things that could confirm what his brother had concluded. And actually he did a number of excavations on the coast of Argentina at a place called Miramar. It's at a big clint. You know what a clint is? Like Dover, Dover, you have the clints of Dover, England. It's the ocean, and you have when the ocean is cutting its way into the land, you have these very steep, drop. Cliffs of Dover, yeah. Except cliffs, these cliffs are not rocky. It's soil like that, but it's soil that is getting exposed by water eroding into the land. So there, at some cliffs here at Miramar, Carlos Ameghino were conducting excavations for quite a number of years, and he found many, many stone tools, and he also found one human bone, what is called one vertebrate, from one top vertebrate. Is that the vertebrate up here? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Found one human vertebrae as well. And so they also got quite some attention in the scientific community. Of course, a lot of criticism was there. But he did find many, many interesting things. One interesting discovery is of this femur here. It's a thigh bone. This is from an extinct animal, South American animal called a toxodon, that went extinct at least 2 million years old, and this particular femur seems to have been like 3 million years old. But it's at least 2 million years old, because there's been no toxodons living for 2 million years. What's interesting about this femur is that at the top of it is an arrowhead is embedded into this femur. So someone was shooting arrows in South America at least 2 and probably 3 million years ago. So that was one thing that was discovered. But many, many stone tools were discovered at that time. And so what happened, this is Carlos Ameghino, and his discoveries, of course, drew attention and a lot of criticism. And in response to that, he arranged to have a group of the best archaeologists and geologists of South America take part and conduct and supervise the excavations there. These are scientists from Argentina and Brazil, and they were conducting the excavations under very supervised conditions. What would happen, what they would do was that the excavation would go on. If someone was discovered, they would stop the excavation. Everyone would be invited to come and witness what was happened, what happened there. Like here, some excavation is going on, and something has been revealed. A round stone ball has appeared here. So then everyone was called for, and actually everyone posed for a photograph. Photograph was taken, and afterwards the excavation continued. And in this particular case, it turned out there was not only one stone ball. It turned out there were three stone balls there. Stone balls like this, which are stones that are cut spherical with a groove down the middle there. They're called bolas. They are generally used, two, three of them. They are, you know, hunters tie them together with a, like for example, leather string, you know, and then you have them tied, and you can hold one stone, and you swing it on this, and then you let go, and they fly off, and then you can catch small animals with these stone, these bowlers. So they found three bowlers like that under, you know, the supervision of some of the top scientists in South America. And they are like, again, what did you say? 2 to 3 million years old? 2 to 5 million years old. So, I mean, there's good evidence that actually there were humans in South America millions of years ago by this. Here is an also interesting discovery. This is from 1979. Very, very famous discovery. This was published in National Geographic and all over the world. Is still considered one of the greatest archaeological discoveries in the 20th century. These are 3.7 million year old footprints. They were discovered in the footprints that were deposited in layers of lava, which you know, where the footprints were deposited, and then immediately appears afterwards, and a new volcanic eruption has covered them and preserved these footprints. These footprints, there are 56 of them altogether, that from three individuals, look like two adults and one child, has been walking there. They were discovered by Mary Leakey, very famous English archaeologist. And she wrote that the late Holy footprints are indistinguishable from modern human footprints. And she wrote that in National Geographic in 1979. Tim White, another paleontologist, scientist, who was actually the one who physically was there, carefully freeing these footprints. He wrote, make no mistake here, they are like modern human footprints. If we went on a beast, you know, I think like today there's probably, you know, you have beaches here in Oslo also, or on the fjord. No? Yes? No?
Beaches.
So probably there are hundreds, even thousands of footprints there today, because people are down and swimming in nice weather. And if you saw these footprints, you couldn't distinguish them from any other footprints. Okay? That's, you know, they're just like our footprints. Does that mean that Mary Leakey and Tim White thought that there were humans like us walking around in Tanzania 3.7 million years ago? No, they didn't think like that. They thought that someone like this must have been there at that time. Some creature, very much like, you know, with ape like bodies, but feet like us. And maybe they were. We don't know. How can you know? But one thing we can tell for sure is that those apes, like an ape-like creatures that are 3.7 million years ago, don't have feet like that. They have clearly monkey feet. Monkey feet are different from our human feet. They're more like our hands. You know, our hands here, in this picture, the thumb is shorter than the other fingers, and the thumb is very flexible. It can move in and out like that. Whereas if you have your regular, sorry, I'm showing my feet. this human feet, actually, the thumb, the big toe, is bigger than the other toes, and it's very stiff. It can only move a little up and down, but not to the side. But monkeys, they have what, more like our hands or feet, and so that's the kind of feet that have been found from that period on ape-like creatures. There's no such a creature has never been found. The only being that is known to have a foot like a human being like us is a human being like us. So I mean, on the face of it, it appears that there must have been human beings like us leaving footprints like that. Some would say, of course, it would be nice if you had complete skeletons of humans like us from that period. The good news is we do have skeletons from that period. They have also been found. One such instance is, here's one, again, they told me footprints, from Italy in 1880, in a place called Castinodolo in northern Italy. Actually, four human skeletons were found that were dated to between 2 and 7 million years. And let's see here. This is taken from the site as it appears today, or appears like in the 1990s. Tutankhamun was there. And these four skeletons were excavated by professional scientists. In particular, here's one of the skulls from that discoveries. They were excavated and studied by Professor Ragazzoni, who was a professional geologist, Italian geologist, and he carefully studied these skeletons as they were found, and he noticed that they were found in layers that were completely undisturbed. They were not. It was not graves from the later age. They were completely on. The layers were completely undisturbed. Here's a drawing. Is what I mean. Many will say, "Hi, Krishna," because that would be the criticism. It's from a grave from a later age, and it's something like this. But okay. The last drawing is anyway. He carefully, you know, Ragazzoni carefully studied it, and he found that the layers were completely undisturbed, and also the way the skeletons were placed were not typical of graves. They actually, I think, all four of them actually were found with their head down, like this, not lying on the back, which is where you normally bury people. It appears more that this whole area was kind of a very shallow bay area or something like that, and these are from people who drowned in that area. Later on, it became, you know, that rose above the ocean, but they look more like victims from drowning than anything else. So actually, they have found skeletons that are from this period 2 to 7 million years old, So that's like that. Here is something interesting. This is from Portugal, again from 1806 to 1880. This is a very big collection of stone tools that are dated to between 15 and 20 million years old. It's getting old now. And these stone tools were discovered by Professor Carlos Ribeiro. He was the state geologist of Portugal, Portugal's leading geologist. And he found found many of these stone tools himself, and also he invited groups of other European archaeologists to come and conduct excavations with him. And together they found and found stone tools, and they confirmed we are finding stone tools in Portugal that are from this particular age, that are this old. What's interesting is here is some drawings of some of these stone tools. Here's some photographs of them. These are photographs that Drusukarma he took. Drusukarma visited the Geological Museum of of Lisbon sometimes in 1990s. And here he is looking at these exhibitions. Now the stone tools that Ribeiro found, they're not been exhibited like this before. They used to be there when Ribeiro was living. But what happened was that when Ribeiro died, then his colleagues thought that, well, this cannot be. You know, we cannot have stone tools that are 15 to 20 million years old in Portugal. So what this his colleagues or the next generation of geologists, they did, they simply changed the labels and gave them a younger age. Well, that nobody had dated that age, but they just put different dates on it. And then they were exhibiting the stone collection for a period. And then the next generation of geologists, they just said, anyway, this is too old, this exhibition. They just took it and they shifted it, and you can never see, but there are filing cabinets here, and this whole collection was just put aside in this in the cupboards there. And Drusukarma, when he came in the 1990s, he was actually the first scientist to even ask to see them, and he was the first probably who studied them for more than 50 years. But here he's looking at these stone implements that had been, you know, 15 to 20 million years old stone tools that had been, you know, kept away for, you know, for at least half a century by this period. So, but we have this such a very extremely old discovery from Portugal. Here's another one, very similar case. This is from Belgium, from a place called Bonsay. In 1907, one Belgian scientist found similar stone tools, but they are even older. They're 26 to 30 million years old. This place Bonsay is not very far from our place Radades, if you're aware of that. We have our big temple in Belgium, big old castle, and it's very close to there. And this is Professor Rito. He was a leading archaeologist in Brussels in those days. And here is the place where he found all these stone tools. And the same thing actually happens as in Portugal in during the lifetime when Rizzo was living. He exhibited these stone tools in his museum in Brussels. When he died, the whole collection was taken off display and hid away. And Drusukarma then came again in the 1990s and asked to see them, and he was the first one to study them for again more than 50 years. But here are some of these stone tools from that. I don't know if you can. Would you recognize this as a stone tool if you found it?
Why do they have this shape? What is the utility of these kind of shapes?
Many of these are. You know, I'm not an expert on this, but they are typical scrapers which you use for example, skin, animal skin. You scrape them.
Right.
So you have them here. This is a pointed. It can be used for maybe making holes in skins or something. I mean, it's obvious. These are from hunters. These are obvious from hunters. And again, I'm not an expert on stone tools myself, but what you can tell is that they have certain features which are not naturally arisen. Like here, you can see this there. It corresponds to them. That's not a natural surface or natural edge. That is someone has been hammering like this on. That you can tell. Otherwise, you can. I mean, actually, if you're actually looking for it, you can find them even here. You find these kind of implements everywhere. But generally, when you're out in the field, and you don't look for them, and you don't find, or you never found anyone like that, did you? The funny thing is, I translated this one into Danish. Do you remember that? I translated that into Danish, and I spent something like 2 years working on it. And during that period, then I got into, you know, my head was filled with stone tools and like that. And actually, when I was taking walks I was living in the country and walking fields and like that. And actually, I found they are there. I still have a small collection at home of stone tools I have found.
You didn't give them to some archaeologists?
They're so common. I mean, they have thousands of these. They're very common. There's nothing special about them. They like, you know, people, and nowadays they throw plastic bags everywhere. Would you go bring a plastic bag to a museum? It's almost like that. They were using these stone tools and throwing them. So this was from Belgium. Tutankhamun, he is studying labels and correspondence about them and so on. Now we go to a very interesting discovery. This is from America, U.S., California. We're actually going to the gold fields in California. You may remember that, or you may read that in 1849 and up until 1890 or something like that, there was a big gold rush in California, and thousands of wild adventurers, they went and they were digging in rivers and like that, and also big mining companies went to California and dug into mountains and made mines and shafts and dug out, I guess, tons of gold there, and it was really wild. But also, what was interesting actually, not only gold was found, but deep within mines, under layers of rock, layers of volcanic rock. That is at least 9 million years old. Under that, they found also again discoveries of stone tools and even some human bones on some occasions. Very extensive discoveries actually. This is a picture of some miners from those days, and. This is a picture of what is called Table Mountain, which was a place where mining took place, and also where stone tools were discovered. Here is a drawing of it. This is the bedrock. This is, I don't know if that's hundreds of millions of years old, but here you have this yellow. These are riverbeds from rivers that used to flow there 55 million years ago. And they are filled up with sand, and that's where the gold is found, actually. These riverbeds is where the gold is found. Later on, the whole area was covered by some volcanic eruptions. One volcanic eruption, and then I think there was one volcanic eruption again. And then the mining companies were making both vertical shafts down, and also horizontal shafts into the where the gold was found in the old riverbeds, and it's inside these riverbeds. Also, that's also where they found different archaeological implements, stone tools, and at least one skull was found. But there are also reports of more than one skeleton was found inside there. Yes. One. It's actually one assistant to the karma, then he's initiated. Devotee is looking, they were out looking for the old shafts that from the, if you go and look in the sea, you find old mining shafts. So this is one example. These stone implements were very advanced stone tools, really, really refined. This is a mortar and a pestle, and they're highly polished and really beautiful stonework. And see what, yeah. And again, at least 9 million years old, because it was the whole area was covered by volcanic layer, 9 million years ago, and could be much older. These discoveries were studied by Professor J.D. Whitney. He was a leading geologist of California in those times. He's famous. Who knows something about Californian geography? The tallest mountain in California is called, someone knows? It's called Mount Whitney, and it's named after Professor Whitney. So he was a big man. And he studied all these stone tools, and he wrote books about it. This is a book published by Cambridge and Harvard together. So that means that the top universities were discussing these discoveries. It was recognized they had found all these stone tools in the California gold mines. And they are, here we have some, you get an idea, these are different geological ages. Corresponding to the layers where they were found, and they are like again between 9 to 55 million years old. And why have you not heard about these discoveries in the California gold mines? Well, to a large degree, it's due to this man, William B. Holmes from the Smithsonian Institution. He went on a direct war against these discoveries because they said they cannot be true. Do I have the quote here? No. But there's a really far out quote from him that he writes something like that if Professor Whitney had understood the theory of human evolution as is accepted nowadays, by Krishna, then Professor Whitney would not have published all these discoveries in spite of the impressive amount of evidence that he was confronted with. He wrote something like that. That, in other words, that even though that he should not have published this, if he actually had, even though he had a very impressive body of evidence, but if he had understood this goes against our theory, he should have desisted from publishing it. He said that, and I don't know how he came to think like that as a scientist, but that's. And there was a big, massive propaganda trying to. So to speak, bury them again, and that seemed to be, at least they became completely forgotten. But they're still there. I'll continue. If you see, actually, these stone tools are still existing. What happened was that in 1996, NBC made a television program called The Mysterious Origins of Man. This is 3 years after Forbidden Archaeology was published, and it had created a lot of interest and, big sensation. So NBC made a program about Forbidden Archaeology, and that program was shown all over America 2 times. 20 million people saw it each time, and it caused a lot of also stir. I mean, people loved it, of course. They really liked this program, but also many scientists, they were really angry of this. Let's see, is that here? Yeah. It's interesting here. This is one professor, Allison R. Palmer, President, Institute for Cambrian Studies, and he wrote to the Federal Communication Commission. This is kind of the American government's commission that grants broadcasting time to television companies like that. And he basically wrote that NBC should be punished for sending such a program. they should be censored, they should be fined, and they should give time to make a proper program about science to tell people the actual truth. He wrote here, this email is a request for the FCC to investigate, and I hope seriously censure the National Broadcasting Company for crassly commercial, irresponsible journalism that seriously violates the trust the public should have in materials that are touted as credible by a major network. At the very least, NBC should be required to make substantial prime-time apologies to their viewing audience for a sufficient period of time so that the audience clearly gets the message that they were duped. In addition, NBC should perhaps be fined sufficiently so that a major fund for public science education can be established. Just to get an idea of the reaction when you present something that is going against the dominant theories. Anyway, this is a little sidetrack because I'm still talking about the California discoveries. For this particular program, NBC actually went to the University of Berkeley because all the discoveries from the California gold mines are still stored at the University of Berkeley. Mm-hmm. They have some storage facilities, some warehouses where they keep these, and they asked University of Berkeley, they would like permission to photograph and film these stone tools. And the university said no. Actually said, we don't have people who can help you with that. And NBC said, we can pay for that. It's not a problem. We'll pay you. We'll pay anything. And then there was some correspondence forth back. Finally, they said flatly, no, we will not allow. So that was it. They were not allowed to go and film them. Then, later, a few years later, Dr. Karma, again, he was writing a paper for in World Congress of Archaeology. I think it's every year there's a World Congress of Archaeology somewhere, and Dr. Karma, he goes, he writes papers, and he's a respected person there. So he wanted to write a paper on these California discoveries. So he went to the University of Berkeley requesting permission to see these stone tools. And this time they actually said yes for some reason. I know maybe they thought that since this is going to be, Congress of Archaeologists, it will not look very well if we have denied access. So they allowed him to come and study these two stone tools. And here he are, I don't know if you can see him. This is maybe not the best selfie, but at least you can see he's there. And here are some of the stone tools found in the California gold mines, which are not exhibited to the public, but they are stored in the warehouse in the University of Berkeley. And they're there, so you can see it for yourself. And here's another one. 286 to 320 million years old. This was a human skeleton was found in a coal mine 30 meters deep, and this particular coal is, this is how old this particular coal is, around 300 million years old. It's from a journal called The Geologist from 1862. There's a short notice about it. But I mean, nowadays nobody knows where that skeleton is or what happens. But you can find that in a journal like that, or you can from Massachusetts in 1852, a discovery that's at least 600 million years old. This is actually from Scientific America, and that wrote about that when they were building a house in Massachusetts, they exploded or blasted a big piece of rock to create the foundation. And from that blast, the rocks cracked, and inside one rock were a beautiful metal vase that also cracked in two, but it was a beautiful metal vase with engravings and so on, drawings from not from any known recognizable culture of an alloy that's also not very common. So that's from again 1852. So you find reports here and there, in even in papers and journals and like that, especially from old time, where that base is. I mean, nobody knows, but it was there. It's mentioned in Scientific American. Here is another one. Now this is actually billions, 2.7 billion years old. This is from South Africa, from some mines in South Africa, a place called Ottosdal. And there they found something like around 200 of these grooves, which are of an extremely hard material. They are like round, and then they're around their middle, or the, you might say around the equator of the ball, they have these grooves here. And they don't really have any natural way that these could have formed, and they're like 2.7 billion years old. Yeah, that's a good question. Last I saw something like this, but I'm not quite sure. And in the forbidden archaeology, they somehow or another missed to give the size of them, which is a mistake. They should also give the size on them. But I saw not so long time ago, I saw them mentioned, and there I think the size was something like, was it 5 centimeters? So they're not terribly big.
Where are they now?
In a museum in South Africa.
They're still at the scrape?
Yeah. As far as I know, you can still go and see them.
But what do they say about the date? It's also, they also say there is...
I don't think that the date is discussed. But they simply just don't, I mean, scientists then don't discuss it like that. But as far as you can go and go and see them.
In a function? Mm-hmm.
No. 2.7 billion years old. Who knows what they were meant for? Models of flying saucers. I don't know. Nobody knows what they actually were. Or who made them, or anything like that. Yeah. So that's kind of, an idea what was there in forbidden archaeology. I've added, of course, this is somewhat already old material. This is published in 1993, Forbidden Archaeology. One is curious, what is happening? Are scientists still finding these, traces of humans which are very old? So I'm just going to give you 3 examples, and then that's going to be the end of it. 3 very recent examples that I myself came across. One example here is from Harrisburg in England. This is 2014. Footprints that were discovered that were 800,000 years old. Here is a 800,000 year old human footprints discovered in the UK. It was on the coast, on the coast of the North Sea, where just briefly an area was exposed, and there, how was it? There they found a series of footprints which are exactly like human footprints, and then later on they were destroyed again by the ocean. But they were exposed long enough so that actually scientists could study them and write about them. So that's one example. Here is an example from 2015 from Olduvai Gorge in Tanzania. There they actually found a finger bone that is 1.84 million years old. It's right here, oldest human-like hand bone may help us understand the evolution of tool making. What they have found is, of course, this up here is what they have found. And you can see down here, it's from a finger bone, from the little finger, the inner bone. We have 3 bones in each finger. So this bone they found, and apparently it is uniquely to unique to humans, to Homo sapiens. I mean, I guess you have to be a pretty good anatomist or like that to say this, that this is uniquely Homo sapiens. So, of course, it's interesting what they say here, that there must have been someone who has amazingly human-like finger bones. But they don't say it was a human, because it's not possible there were no there were no Homo sapiens around that time, 8.84 million. We never found any evidence of that, and we not found them, so therefore they're not there.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, that's constantly the, you know, the response. Some creature with a very human-like feet, or in this case, bone or something like that. Instead of just saying they were Homo sapiens. And then they say that we've not found any evidence of them, but they're everywhere. They find them constantly. So this is from 2014, 15 again. And this, this is just less than 1 year ago. On Crete, in Greece, the island of Crete, again they found footprints. A number of how many footprints were there? Quite many. Series of footprints, again human-like footprints, and they are 5.2 million years old. So they keep, you know, again keep popping up again, these discoveries again and again and again. Okay, that was the chart we started with. But here, actually, if you really look at it and the full body of evidence for what's there, it actually, the chart should look like this. You actually have a human presence all the way. As long as you can trace life back, also you find evidence of humans and human activity and like that. So, and that's just to give you a small idea. Really, to get the full grasp of it, you have to read this book here. Or anyway, you can read the big book, the small book. Yeah.
About this Brazil, they say Naravana was in this gold.
Yeah.
There is some evidence on these journals where she was.
I don't know. I know Prabhupada said it. No, I can't. I can't answer that.
I'm wondering about the human footprints that you found 800 years ago or a couple of million years ago.
Yeah.
Aren't they supposed to be bigger than the humans now?
These ones are not bigger. I mean, but if you talk about, Dwapara Yuga and like that, they are supposed to be bigger footprints than ours. Yeah.
So maybe these were just children?
Yeah, or maybe there's some primitive hunters who were small by stature. Uh-huh. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Giants. I mean, I haven't looked so much into that, but there is also discoveries of giants here and there. Giant footprints, giant tools, and there are claims even of skeletons of giants. You know, 3 meters, 5 meters tall, and they found them. But I have not looked that much into it to actually really good. Say anything conclusive about them.
Just had a comment that you said, you know, scientists, if there is an idea which just dear to them,
mm-hmm.
then they would not scrutinize that much.
No.
And that happens today as well. I mean, happens all the time in
all
the fields.
Yeah.
Two scientists, they just fight with each other. They have their own, you know.
Mm.
They just try to. Yeah.
And
make gangs.
No, it's, I mean,
let one theory survive.
Yeah, I mean, that's why. I mean, And even today, many people are very skeptical of the world of science.
Yeah.
Because a lot of what comes out of it is false. Sometimes it's just, you know, flawed.
Mm.
Sometimes it's outright faked. And you remember, was it last year, there were scientists, they were having marching for science. People actually have faith in science. Remember that? Or something like that. But people nowadays actually are so informed. It's not only scientists who can read and are informed. People in general are actually quite informed nowadays. And they know that a lot of what goes on in the name of science is actually quite flawed.
Mm.
And in many cases, directly manipulated. In Copenhagen, we had a big scandal. There was one professor, she outright falsified her research and published it. So it's a problem when the, you know, the Vedic standard is that Brahmins are not paid.
Yeah.
That's you know, Brahmanas are independent. They are studying and they're teaching, and they're not. And nobody pays them.
Mm-hmm.
They live by charity. They live very simple,
mm-hmm.
Like that, and therefore they can speak, and they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
They don't worry about the consequence. They can be fired because they're not hired in the first place, and they can just speak truth.
Mm-hmm.
But modern scientists are hired. They need grants. And so on, and if you know, and who's given the grants? The business people, and the politicians. They have their agendas. I mean, the business people, they want some research that can generate money, generally, where, you know, that's why, for instance, there's so much studies into pharmacology and like that, because it's, you know, finding new medicines is big business.
Yeah.
It's good money.
Yeah.
So then you can get a lot of grants for that. Politicians also often have agendas, and they want, for example, you know, if you take, we all know Taj Mahal, and you know the history of Taj Mahal.
Mm-hmm.
What is the history?
Some say it was a Shiva temple and then it was destroyed and somebody made a mosque, or not a mosque, but
mausoleum.
Yeah, yeah.
Mausoleum.
Okay, but you know more than most people. Like the official story is that it was built by Shah Jahan as a mausoleum, as a memorial for his wife Mumtaz. That's Taj Mahal.
Yeah.
But you because there's more to it.
I mean, that's what I've heard. Some stories like that.
It's Indian archaeologist, Professor Rao, in the 1970s, 1980s, were doing a lot of research on Taj Mahal, and he concluded this is not a Muslim thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's an old Shiva Mandir, and it was taken from the king of Jaipur by Muslims. They took it over. And they simply just changed a little, and then they, you know, made it into a memorial for this Mumtaz. But yes, I mean, there's no evidence that this Shah Jahan was building such a monumental structure. Of course, it doesn't make sense. I mean, okay, maybe he loved his wife, but I mean, to that extent, and you know, it cannot. I mean, it has taken generations to build something like that. And so he found quite, you know, he actually demonstrated this is much older, it's an old Hindu structure like that, the Muslims say took over. So when he wanted to publish that, Indira Gandhi went in and stopped, we don't want this published. Because he knew this could flare riots between Muslims and Hindus, so therefore she said, we don't want this. So politicians, you know, have also their agendas when it comes to dealing with science. And so in many fields of science, there's so much manipulation going on. It's a scandal.
Yeah. Recently, you know, there was a couple of years back, there was actually an article published on Ayurveda in nature, they accepted it.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was because in Ayurveda you do not try, you give individual medication. You try to understand that person and its nature, and then you prescribe medicine for that.
Yeah.
It was that kind of approach which you explained in that article.
Yeah.
Which was kind of accepted as well.
Yeah. I mean, and you do find in scientific publications also, you know, other points of view, but then again, it's pretty much ignored.
Grants to research.
Yeah, I mean, it's, what can you, because who will grant big money for that? Because afterwards, you know, you cannot, there's no, nothing comes back. You know, like big medical pharmaceutical company, what interest would they have in promoting Ayurveda? People basically learn to live in a way so they don't become sick and they can cure themselves with very simple natural means. There's not, who has interest in that? It's a, so it's not supported, it's not. And then when, but you can, you know, if you can find some kind of very expensive drug, it turns out to be that, you know, can somewhat alleviate like you know, some, what's it called? Sukkersyge, hvad hedder det her? Sukkersyge.
Diabetes?
Diabetes, yeah, exactly. Some, you know, you find some, you know, something that can kind of, not necessarily cure diabetes, but it just can keep it under control, and people have to take that medication the rest of their life. That's good business. That's really good business. We have, I know that one of the biggest metal companies in the world is a Danish company, Novo, and they're big on medicine against diabetes. And their business is just flying like anything, because the way people are living is, you know, they're just getting more and more diabetes due to modern lifestyle. And but instead of, you know, educating people to change their lifestyle, I mean, these medical companies don't do that.
No.
They just produce drugs and medicines and so on, and make money on that and keep people in disease condition. So, yeah. Anything else on this? That's, is it understandable? So, the, I mean, we have no archaeological reasons to doubt the Vedic scriptures as such. That's actually, that's a simple conclusion. It's actually, this is actually just about strengthening our faith in the Shastra. This is actually, this, you know, otherwise I have no interest in science, really. Without the connection to that, to actually strengthen our faith in the Shastra, this would be boring for me.
How many years is it one yuga cycle?
One yuga cycle is it 4,320,000 years?
Okay, there's a lot of yuga cycles.
Yeah.
To the last.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we should stop here then, isn't it? Thank you. We'll continue at what time is supposed to.
1:30, I think.
What?
At 2?
We continue again at 2? It's 1:30 now. So we continue at 2. Are you ready? I mean, that's okay.
1 hour 10 minutes.
Okay. That's intense.
If it's okay for you?
Yeah, for me it's fine. So I'm talking, so I'm not. I'm just getting more excited the more I talk. But you who are listening, you are doing. Okay, so there will be more archaeological, but that will be, I said, that's about Dwapara Yuga and the Stone Age. And you've seen that already? Did you?
When? I think so.
I'm not sure.
I saw it in Copenhagen.
it was also part of the seminar, right?
Yeah. I made some adjustments. I hope it's better than when you saw it.
It's different, yeah. It's nice.
Same conclusion, but no, adjusting it. So. So I'll see you in 1.5 hours. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Krishna, 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 Krish